We are talking about the Wisconsin Conference on Latinx Art and Culture here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's free virtual talks around Latinx heritage aimed at making connections among artists who have lived in or had significant experience in Wisconsin. Did your relatives make their way home in Wisconsin after traveling from Mexico or Latin America? What cultural traditions did they bring with them? How do you carry forward the art and culture? It's 800-642-1234. Oscar Morales is an author, poet, and founder of Latinos Organizing for Understanding and Development, or goes by the acronym LOUD, which is presenting the conference virtually this Friday. Oscar, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks a lot, Kate. I'm excited to be here.
So why is this the moment? Why is it important for us to recognize and appreciate and learn about Hispanic art and culture now in Wisconsin?
Well, first of all, Friday is the last day of Hispanic Heritage Month, where nationally we recognize the contributions of Latinos from all Mexico, Latin America, Central America, Puerto Rico. We recognize their contributions to our country.
And what have you seen as far as contributions to Wisconsin? What do you see from the community?
Well, first of all, we're in all parts of Wisconsin, while some people might assume we're in the larger metropolitan areas, but we're in every township. We're helping out the dairy industry. We're everywhere, and we're here to stay.
So give us some details about the conference and what people can expect.
Well, the conference will be this Friday. It's a virtual conference, so, and it's also free. We'll have filmmakers, poets, muralists, songwriters, just a mix of culture, different art forms, really trying to capture the Latino experience in all its forms and variations.
It sounds like it's going to be very lively and pretty fast moving because these are shorter presentations, I understand.
Yes, with Zoom being an experience we've all had during the pandemic, what we've realized is creating a shorter format along the lines of a TED Talk, about 18 minutes. The only thing I remind the speakers, they don't have to stand and walk around a lot. But it's really a shortened version to really hit the highlights. And I think the audience would have an opportunity to jump in. They might not attend all the sessions, but have an opportunity to stop in, and they know that there's an endpoint.
When you look at the rundown and you look at the list of presenters, what do you hope are some of the major takeaways?
Well, with the Latino Strings Program, I actually worked in Milwaukee at the United Community Center and the predecessor of Latino Arts. You see how the speaker, Denora Marquez, she is able to transmit culture, history, understanding through creating a mariachi. And while the goal is not to have all the students become musicians, the goal is to have them be well-rounded individuals, understand the importance of hard work and practice and working as a team. Those soft skills translate to a better future for everyone.
Yeah, Denora directs the Latino Arts Strings Mariachi Group, and we have a little bit of their summer concert. Let's take a listen. So that's the Mexican folk song, El Son de la Negra. You know, what do you see in terms of the next generation and passing on culture?
Well, first of all, a lot of the Latin American countries are less than 2 or 3 hours away by plane ride. So there's a close connection, both physically, and there's also a sense in all of us a longing for home, a longing to find our roots. You see the growth of Ancestry.com. People want to know our past so they can be better prepared for our future.
We're talking with Oscar Morales, who's an author, poet, founder of Latinos Organizing for Understanding and Development, which is presenting the state's first Latinx Arts and Culture Conference set for this Friday in a virtual format. You can join in. What are your favorite aspects of Latino culture? Is it the music, the art, the on-screen performances and storytelling? Join in at 800-642-1234. Your keynote speaker is Zarco Guerrero, a sculptor, a mask maker, performance artist working in Arizona. What do you hope that Zarco can convey?
Well, I had the pleasure of meeting Zarco when I was 19 years old. My older brother was working at the University of Wisconsin Oshkosh, and he was actually the first artist I ever met of Latino descent. And he does these amazing masks that really highlight the pre-Columbian culture. And he really talked about how we need to use our culture as a tool to really cross boundaries, cross understanding, and really make connections with others. And he believes art can do that.
And I love seeing his masks on a bright lemony colored wall. And there are these brilliant expressive faces. And each one, you know, you say pre-Columbian culture. I see the ancient people and wise people in his art. How does the art speak to you?
Well, as a poet, it's how do you use the tools that you're given to really transmit culture, create opportunities for understanding. And I think through those experiences, we can bring our community together.
Yeah. One of my favorites of Zarco's is the mask he made of himself, like the self-portrait mask. I got a real kick out of that one. That was really creative.
Yeah, I was actually in Phoenix earlier this summer, and we had a chance to walk through his gallery, and he has a large puppetry. He understands that while it would be nice to be able to focus on just his mask making, he had an opportunity to go to Japan and do that. He's a sculptor. He's a puppetry. He's a muralist. He's really used and expanded his talent to really create a career and a lifestyle for himself as a working artist.
So moving on to another session featuring Armando Ibarra, a professor of Chicano and Latino studies at UW-Madison, exploring public health, which is, of course, extremely important in these times. Why would you include this topic in the conference about arts and culture?
Well, Dr. Ibarra had a team of organizers and educators who went to all the small communities in Wisconsin and did focus groups. He wanted to hear from the individuals, the families, and find out what is their experience. And using those tools and those conversations, really to how do we improve their lives? And sometimes it doesn't take a lot, but if you don't spend the time to listen, it's hard to, you know, you're just guessing. And I think, especially nowadays, we need to use science more than anything else.
Well, and you know, this is an open-ended question, and take this wherever it may travel, but how is your community and the Latinx community doing in the pandemic?
Well, fortunately, here in Dane County, under the leadership of our Latino Health Council, we have one of the highest vaccination rates for Latinos in most of the counties across the country. But you need bilingual staff that are working with vaccination, doing the outreach. So you need that cultural competence and that connection to the community. Many of these people are hoping to pursue a medical degree, and this gives them that hands-on experience they need as they're working their way through medical school.
Yeah, and you know, that cultural competence piece, so important. And I'm wondering, can you point to examples of where the community is receiving resources and services to be supported during this COVID time, or where there are gaps, where you are witnessing a lack of resources?
Well, I know here in Dean County, the Latino Health Council was able to work with a local radio station, La Movida. Mm-hmm. They were able to really work with a local grocery store to do vaccinations, because that's where people go. People want to, you know, purchase their daily essential items. And I think the other thing is, Latinos are essential workers. They're the ones that are been during this pandemic working and making sure that we're able to have all the goods and services that we need each day.
We have poet Oscar Morales organizing the Wisconsin Conference on Latinx Art and Culture, a virtual conference set for Friday with TED Talk style shorter presentations on Zoom. Do you have a favorite Latinx poet, musician, actor, or filmmaker? Who are they? What do you love about them? Be part of this conversation, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Oscar Morales here on the Ideas Network. We're exploring a conference Friday on Latinx art and culture in Wisconsin on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. So this is the first of what organizer and poet Oscar Morales hopes will become an annual showcase of the artistic achievements of Hispanic residents, who, by the way, account for the largest racial minority group in Wisconsin. Do you plan to attend the conference? What do you hope to learn or take away from it? Join in, 800-642-1234. Oscar Morales is with us for about 8 more minutes. So this conference, Oscar, is being presented through your organization known as LOUD, standing for Latinos Organizing for Understanding and Development. Besides the conference, what does this group do?
Well, it was founded about 6 years ago when I was appointed Poet Laureate of Madison. And while the Poet Laureate program had a couple of activities already in place, we wanted to really expand it. What I found is that the Milwaukee Poet Laureate was sponsored by the Milwaukee Public Library. Mm-hmm. So I partnered up with the Madison Public Library, and we did a number of events, including parking ticket poetry, mm-hmm. where we created parking tickets, poems written by the poet laureates. And we saw people would pick up what looked like a parking ticket on April Fool's Day, which was National Poetry Month, and see a poem and have a smile versus a real parking ticket. I think last year when they had a lot of the State Street was boarded up, we created a website called MadisonMurals.com, which working with the Umoja magazine, we created an issue that really showcased all the murals, and the website, MadisonMurals.com, created lesson plans. One of our donors mentioned that the Umoja magazine became her daughter's go-to-bed book. Daughter wanted her to explain what's the story behind these pictures. So we've been doing a number of different activities really to use art as a vehicle, not only for social change, but for understanding.
You mentioned murals, and you have muralist Reynaldo Hernandez, who's created art and within various communities throughout Wisconsin. What is his participation like here as a muralist?
Well, if you drive down the interstate in Milwaukee going downtown, you'll see his beautiful mural as you leave the near south side. I've had the opportunity in my past work to work on a couple murals with, commission a couple of murals with Reynaldo. And he's an amazing artist, even a more amazing person. But he understands the whole history of murals. So part of it's it really his sessions not only about his artwork, but the culture and understanding that goes into his artwork.
Mm-hmm. And the endurance, how much work goes into a mural. That is a labor of love. That's really intense.
Yeah, and he's created murals that last, you know. So the right material, the right paint, the right epoxy to kind of make sure it's both anti-graffiti and that'll withstand the sunlight. It's really an art form in itself, the production end.
Mm. We're talking with Oscar Morales, who's a poet, founder of Latinos Organizing for Understanding and Development, which is presenting the state's first Latinx Arts and Culture Conference set for Friday in a virtual format. You can join in 800-642-1234. Another presenter we talked to here on the morning show just in August, Alejandro Miranda Cruz, who created the movie Trace the Line. And he described for us the challenges and the opportunities of making a film in the middle of both the pandemic and the Black Lives Matter protests. Here's some of what he said.
We were also very nimble and accommodating to what was happening live. And so as events were unfolding, we were writing them into the narrative.
So how have films caused or captured social change in Latino culture and communities, Oscar?
Well, first of all, Alejandro is our next generation. Hmm. He's the future. And if you've had a chance to see his films, it's not just a camera and two people, it's a whole production. And so him and his wife, Noelle at Brave Bird, had done an amazing job of, being in the moment. I think everyone ran away from the pandemic. He rushed in and saw it as an opportunity to really talk about, racial justice, kind of relationships, how art fits in, and how the pandemic really affected us a lot more than we realize. Watching the film just took me back there to this situation where isolated, unknown, not clear about the future, and that's the power of film to do that.
Mm. A few of the breakout sessions are being presented in Spanish. Why is that important?
Well, it's when you talk about cultural competence, it's language, culture, it's a way of transmitting a better sense of who we are and who we want to be. I think for some of the Spanish teachers out there looking for some extra things to add to their class, this workshop will provide not only the language, but provide the context of Latino art, history, and really bring it together so we can have some cross-cultural understanding.
Poetry as well, part of this conference, something near and dear to you, to your heart, serving two terms as Poet Laureate of Madison. I'm wondering, would you mind reading us one of your poems today?
Sure. I have a poem called My Mother is a Social Worker Who Works in a Hospital. My mother is a social worker who works in a hospital. She makes daily visits, checks her charts, and shares small talk with the patients as she brightens up their rooms. My mother is a social worker who works in a hospital. She's always the first one at the scene, just like the television doctors, whether in the birthing room, at my niece Amanda's arrival, or at the operating table, medicine's trap door. My mother is a social worker who works in a hospital. My mother translates for the Spanish patients, especially after surgery. She touches their fear with words that can heal. My mother is a social worker who works in a hospital. Surprisingly, there is little blood on her pink uniform, just a day's sweat and dirt. You wouldn't know she was a cleaning lady if you looked in her eyes. My mother is a social worker who works in a hospital.
Oscar, thank you for your words that can heal and can touch us.
I think it's just a testament not only to my mother, but it's how we, as hardworking, caring, family-oriented culture, it's just not only doing our job, it's providing the best we can do and giving all of us, no matter what we do. And I think this conference will really share the best of our culture and why we're going to help America get through all this pandemic and all this social strife.
Oscar, thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Kate Archer-Kent.
Oscar Morales, author, poet, founder, which presenting the state's first Latinx Arts and Culture Conference virtually this Friday. News update is next on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Mary Kate McCoy with a story about an animal sanctuary.
Primate research has led to countless scientific breakthroughs, but when a monkey is no longer needed for research, what happens next can be an ethical quandary. In South Central Wisconsin, a team runs a sanctuary for monkeys as a way to say thank you for their contributions to science. Jana Rose Slice brings us the story.
There's a small animal sanctuary tucked away in a quiet rural area in Marquette County. Here, you'll find 9 monkeys living in habitats close to their natural environment.
That's actually Bella doing a warning call, saying stranger danger, there's visitors today. But she likes to let the other monkeys know what's going on.
That's Amy Kerwin, executive director and founder of Primates, Inc.
And then Jojo on the right, he's a green monkey. He's just 1 year old.
The monkeys living here were former research animals or pets. Kerwin used to work with 97 rhesus monkeys in a University of Wisconsin-Madison lab. She loved caring for them as they were used for biomedical research.
You know, some labs don't want your employees to grow close to the animals, but since the monkeys are so like us, it's almost inevitable. You're going to grow close to them, so why not help facilitate and give a chance so they can give back?
Kerwin has set out to do just that. When an animal is no longer needed for research, it has few options. It costs thousands of dollars for one monkey's retirement care.
It costs just hundreds of dollars to be able to euthanize a monkey to free up their cage or sell them to more research than you actually make money. So the motivation to retire is an ethical compromise.
After learning about the barriers monkeys face getting into retirement, especially in Wisconsin, Kerwin decided to make a change. She started Primates, Inc. so the retired monkeys can live their lives as close to their wild counterparts as possible. It's also a way to thank them for their contributions to science. Fallon Mullen also used to work with monkeys in a research lab and is now the animal care manager at Primates, Inc. She's responsible for the day-to-day care of the monkeys.
This is Mars. Just turned 16, like I said. He is a rhesus macaque male as well, also from the biomedical industry, and he's paired with Timon, who everyone calls Sweet Timon because she's just so kind of timid and really, really sweet-natured.
Many of Primates, Inc. residents have never lived in their natural environment. Staff maintain greenhouses, raised walkways, and indoor and outdoor spaces for the monkeys. Mullen says this encourages natural behaviors like foraging, grooming, and playing.
But we've never seen a monkey actually swim. They'll sit in the pool. The pools are, you know, like either like kiddie pools that you would imagine or like turtle sandbox, you know, about that depth. So not real deep. But the monkeys in the past have, you know, like I said, just sat in them, waited in them.
But Mullen says that changed when a pair of surrendered pets showed up.
But Noah, who is a rhesus macaque male, he is paired with Maddie. We just gave them their pool this month, and he can be seen actually swimming. So he goes under the water, and does several circles and will come up for air, and it's just so amazing to see, because he didn't learn this from the other monkeys here. So this was just like his natural instinct coming out, and also such a great story about why monkeys should have the opportunity for retirement. It's just so amazing.
Kerwin hopes to grow Primates, Inc. to house 100 monkeys because she sees the impact retirement in a natural environment can have on former research animals.
Jana Roche Leis brought us that story about an animal sanctuary. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org. I'm Mary Kate McCoy. And now, how to talk with kids and teens about underage drinking. An initiative from the Department of Health Services is calling these conversations small talks, these short, casual conversations that help adults connect with kids on difficult topics. Have you talked with your child about alcohol? How did it go? Join in 800-642-1234. Cassandra Frisk is an outpatient therapist and women's recovery journey therapist at Family Services of Northeast Wisconsin in Green Bay. Cassandra, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me. Excited to be here.
So when you hear about these small, casual conversations, the State Health Department urging them about the dangers of alcohol, and starting these conversations with kids around age 8, why start this young?
I think it's important to start conversations young, and research also shows this, because it helps kids get the information that they need. They get the truth from their parents and older adults, instead of trying to find out for themselves, through social media and things like that. Now it's so much easier to find misleading information. So having those conversations with your children young helps provide them with accurate information, and then also helps open up the conversation so they feel more comfortable coming to you in the future.
Yeah, in those small conversations, they seem kind of like low impact. The stakes aren't so high because, you know, something might not be wrong at that moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, research also shows for a lot of things, like medical conditions and as well as mental health conditions, like prevention is key. I mean, it's much easier to have an intervention when it's much earlier on, instead of when the problem is kind of in crisis.
Under state law, Wisconsin parents can take their child into bars and even allow them to drink under supervision. How does alcohol affect child development at different ages?
Oh man, it affects a lot of the brain development and just kind of mental health aspects. So we see that our brain, I mean, really, most adults also aren't really able to digest alcohol properly, but for children, the brain is still developing. And so when we have something come into our body that's foreign, that we're maybe not ready for, it can really alter some of the developmental process. So it's concerning because if we have children seeing a positive impact of alcohol, which I think is fine, but if we see that, oh, it's okay to be doing this at a young age, they're not really seeing the effects of what happens to the brain in the moment. So things like you might see, a higher risk of addiction, which is going to be difficult on your brain. And then also just developmentally. So the prefrontal cortex is the part of the brain that develops last. And that's where you get a lot of your decision-making and kind of reasoning part of the brain. That doesn't develop until we're in our 20s typically. So if we're drinking before then, it's going to alter that process and could maybe make it difficult to have some of those reasoning skills in the future.
Cassandra, what changes in attitudes or behaviors might suggest that your teenager has started drinking? What might you be looking for?
I think it depends on your relationship with your child already. So if you have a pretty strong relationship with your child and you know that they're telling you mostly everything, you know the people they're spending their time with, you know what they're doing after school, those kind of things. If you know that already, and then they start to pull back and not tell you as much, they kind of become more secretive. Maybe you catch them lying more than normal. That would be a concern. I mean, it doesn't mean that it's necessarily that they're drinking. Also teenagers and young kids try to, they try to rock the boat, see what they can get away with. But I think that's a good kind of red flag as far as knowing your child, and maybe you don't have such a relationship with your child and you're working on it. And then at that point, you know, asking questions, like if you notice that they are more withdrawn from you, and that's pretty typical, providing yourself an opportunity to go in and talk to them more often, kind of give them some tools as far as like things to do other than drinking.
We have therapist Cassandra Frisk explaining approaches to talking with kids about alcohol use and underage drinking. What do you want to know about underage drinking or addiction? How were your experiences as a child shaped around alcohol? When did you start drinking? What do you wish someone had told you as a teen? Still time to talk about this. 800-642-1234 to join in. That's 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Cassandra Frisk here in the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about kids and underage drinking, a health problem here in Wisconsin. According to the State Health Department, nearly 3 out of 5 Wisconsin teens have tried alcohol. 2/3 of Wisconsin teens don't see underage drinking as a risk. So with these stats in mind, what have you talked about with your teen or child about drinking? Have you brought up conversations about underage drinking? How have they gone? 800-642-1234 to join in. Cassandra Frisk is an outpatient therapist at Family Services of Northeast Wisconsin and with us for about 9 more minutes. Cassandra, there was a study recently that looked at how alcohol is portrayed in popular TikTok videos. And so the researchers, they poured through 100 videos with the alcohol hashtag that were collectively viewed about 300 million times. And the vast majority of the videos were pro-alcohol, in favor of alcohol. How surprising is that?
Unfortunately, it's not too surprising. I think that in the realm of social media, a lot of things are glorified and kind of skewed in a way that isn't maybe so much reality as just more of how people want to portray everything. So, yeah, unfortunately, not very surprising.
Are there pressures we might not be aware of to drink and pressures to consume alcohol that are through social media channels?
Well, maybe. It's hard to say. I think there's always been a pressure for people, no matter what generation they've had or what generation they are considering. There's always a pressure to drink alcohol, like that peer pressure kind of comes out for people. And I think now it's just we're able to see it firsthand, and it's kind of easier access to get to those pressures as far as the social media aspect of things. So I think that there's still a good amount of kids out there who aren't pressured by it, but then also I think seeing these videos, like I said, kind of glorifying alcohol consumption, like having a good time, that kind of thing, is what's concerning. And I think that's where people get kind of caught up in wanting to be a part of that.
Yeah, you know, when you say glorifying alcohol and really ignoring the actual side effects, because the TikTok study found consuming multiple drinks quickly was depicted in more than half of the videos, and the signs of actual intoxication were really rare. So how can parents talk with kids about alcohol's effects?
Parents should talk to kids very honestly about alcohol. Like, it's not for most people, well, for everybody, the side effects are going to be different. I mean, some people are just allergic to alcohol and they don't know that until they try it, where there's people that can maybe tolerate more than others. So I think having an honest conversation with your child as far as how, sure, maybe some of these social media platforms, TikTok is showing one way of drinking, like you mentioned, but not, I mean, you get to a point where they can't probably be showing videos of them being intoxicated because they can't work a phone anymore. Like it's, there's no way for people to, like you said, see those effects. So we also don't want to scare children either. We don't want them to think that it's the worst thing in the world, because there are people who can consume alcohol at a reasonable amount and have a good time and be safe. But talking about some of those real life situations, such as, you know, kids are drinking and they get in trouble in high school or middle school, they're not going to be able to play sports. It maybe is difficult for them to get a scholarship. Maybe, you know, depending on what type of job they're wanting in the future, it might be detrimental for that.
Yeah. And, you know, you talk about you don't want to scare them, but binge drinking is, you know, a real concern, a real problem. So how do you walk that line and even approach binge drinking and what it can do?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this is going to have to depend a little bit on your relationship with your child. So if you have a child who is going to, you know, you say black and they say white, well, maybe you're going to have to come at it a little bit differently as far as giving them the information and letting them do with it what they can. We can't control anybody else. We only can control ourselves. And so if we do our part as parents by providing that information, we've done our part. And so I think, yeah, there is a fine balance between the binge drinking and and just the casual drink. I mean, none of that is going to be acceptable for someone under the age of 21. I mean, that's just illegal. And like I said, with the brain development. So I think also telling kids, so there's for adult women, there's a recommended amount of two drinks in a sitting and then seven drinks for the week. And then for adult men, it's three drinks in a sitting and then 14 drinks throughout the week. So it shows, I think even that, like that's the recommended amount. And it shows like, okay, well, we can have two drinks and like this is recommended because the binge drinking has such detrimental effects on our ability to make wise decisions, to be productive in our lives, to even get good sleep. I mean, if we're binge drinking right before bed, we're not probably sleeping very well either. The kind of overall health and wellness aspects.
Overall health and wellness diminishes. We're talking about underage drinking with Cassandra Frisk, an outpatient therapist at Family Services of Northeast Wisconsin. How does your family treat alcohol when kids are around? Do you drink in front of your children? Does your family go to bars? Do you ever allow kids to drink underage? Join in. Your situation, your stories, 800-642-1234. Cassandra, we had a caller who asked to remain anonymous and asked, how can you tell if a young person has a problem with alcohol? And they want to know, how can we help a young person who seems to be an alcoholic?
Oh, that's a great question. Yes. So signs that you would want to look for, again, making, you know, depending on your relationship with your child, how well you know them, you're going to want to look for some secretive behavior. So are they going places they don't normally go? Are they acting in ways that they don't normally act? Do you notice grades slipping? Do you notice, them spending time with friends that they maybe wouldn't spend as much time with? You know, making sure that you have the alcohol that you have in the house as a parent is maybe put somewhere that they don't know about or somewhere where they can't access it as easily. Yeah. And checking, I mean, honestly, a lot of the time, if you just come out and honestly ask your child if they're, I mean, with anything, if they're using drugs, if they're using alcohol, if they're having sex, like any conversation that's typically taboo, if we just come out and ask them, they're probably going to tell us the truth. And we're going to hope for that too, right? We're going to hope that our children are able to be honest with us. So those are the kind of some things to look for. And as far as getting help, there's great therapists out there that can help children with their substance use. So not only alcohol, but just drugs as well. And getting just kind of a second opinion. It might not be that they are using alcohol. Maybe they're having more depression symptoms. But I mean, even then, that's really important for the children to be able to get the support that they need from a professional.
Cassandra, what is your sense of how the pandemic might be affecting underage drinking? Can you make any type of prediction or estimation?
Well, I think that we saw it in the beginning. There were, I guess I don't know how accurate this is, but I remember in the beginning of the pandemic when people were in more lockdown quarantine situations, people were consuming more alcohol. And I think also because that wasn't really being able to be monitored as far as for children, you know, whether, you know, maybe they had parents who had to work outside the home. And so they were maybe more unsupervised and had more time to kind of experiment with things. I guess I haven't seen any research per se. There's probably some out there. But the increase in just overall mental health concerns has been pretty alarming as far as how the pandemic has gone for people. I mean, I see it every day for children, to adults. And I think that even if we're maybe not noticing firsthand that alcohol has been increased kind of correlationally with the pandemic, for sure, I would imagine that there definitely has been more of an increase with social media, like we've talked about.
Yeah, we'll have to just keep watching it. Cassandra, thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. It's been great to be on with you.
Cassandra Frisk is an outpatient therapist and women's recovery journey therapist at Family Services of Northeast Wisconsin. Just ahead, we explore the growing landscape of specialized media providers with a look at Hmong media entrepreneurs in the digital age. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.